Steve Dallaire from Boulevard Brutal. Today on the phone we have the honor to have the lead singer from Dark Tranquility, the legendary Michael Stann. First of all, thank you, Michael, for giving us some time through your busy schedule. It's really an honor to have you on the phone with us today.
Hey, it's my pleasure. You know, this is good. I'm happy to talk about some new music.
Yes, and speaking of new music, you have a new album coming out May 27th, which is called The Construct. And you have mentioned in the press that it's your best album in a long time and the most diverse. Can you tell us exactly why?
Oh, I don't know. We feel very, very strongly about this. We've worked really hard making something different. You know, I guess we were somehow burned out a little bit after the last couple of records. We spent so much time writing those albums. We spent so much time kind of working back and forth with every single piece of the songs that it just was so exhausting, you know. Even though it ended up really well, we were just tired of the whole process, you know. And now finally, you know, after 2.5 years of touring, we realized that we needed to change that and come up with a new method of writing, and we did. We started working in the studio instead of in the rehearsal room, stuff like that. Small changes, perhaps, but for us, huge, huge difference. And what came out of it was something new and very, very creative. I think the origins for the songs is coming from a very, very dark place. We were very, kind of low point personally and for the band as well. And then we slowly but securely crawl our way out of that and came up with something that we feel extremely strongly about. And it became this kind of new, fresh start for us in many ways. You know, it realized that we could kind of take a step back and be more objective about our music and not totally just, to go so deeply into it and every single aspect, and just now we could listen to it and it's like realize, okay, what is important? What do we need to do? What does this song need? What's the main melody here, and how could we emphasize on that, and how can we make it even stronger? That kind of stuff. And it was so liberating and so energizing to start to think like that, and it really, really make us feel great that we actually made it this time, you know, and we did something that we could be, we can stand in front of an audience and look them in the eye and be 100% honest with how we feel about this, you know, and I couldn't be happier with that.
And did you have a chance to play new songs live yet?
No. We're going to play in a couple of weeks, I think. We're going to do shows in Turkey and Tunisia and somewhere else, and that's going to be the first time we premiere some of the new songs, so I'm very excited about that.
Cool. And you just put out a new song called For Broken Words, and it's really heavy and dark at the same time. It reminds me of the Projector era. Is that a coincidence?
Perhaps not. I mean, it was nothing that was intentional, but similarly to the Projector album, this is something that came out of frustration. You know, we at the time in the late 90s before the Projector album, we felt really tired of our own sound. We were tired of the fact that we were being lumped together with this kind of Gothenburg sound statement and thing that was being popularized, and it felt weird. So we wanted to break out and prove to ourselves and everybody else that we could be different. We're not just this. We're more, okay. You know. And I think that's what we felt this time as well. You know, we didn't want to. We couldn't. We felt like we couldn't top We Are the Void. You know, that's as far as we could go with a certain style, a certain type of our sound. And so now we had to start over again in a way. You know, and it took a lot of time to get there and to start that process, but once we got there, I think that openness and that kind of attitude we had towards this album is very similar in ways to the feeling we had with Projector. And so there are some really, really mellow moments on this album that definitely certainly has similarities, I think, to the Projector album.
Okay, and you just recently shot a video for the song Uniformity. What can we expect from that clip?
I'm not really sure. We shot it, and the stuff that we did, I think, will look pretty cool. You know, I have no idea. But Patrick is a great director. He's working on it right now, and we're very excited to see what he can come up with. But and I think the song is very, very strong and powerful, and I think it's, I cannot wait for people to hear it, you know. And it's a video track that is 5 minutes long, and it includes a drum solo. So, you know, it's total radio friendly, you know.
Okay, well, that's cool. We need that.
I think so, yeah.
So when do you expect the video to come out?
I think it's in the beginning of May. I think on the 8th of May, I think. So, you know, like 2 weeks before the album is released, something like that.
Well, I can't wait to see that. And even though in the past years you had a steady lineup, you recently departed with the bassist, Daniel Antonsen, and that's my silly question of the day. What the hell is wrong with bass players these days?
Or what the hell is wrong with us? I don't know. It's kind of hard for people to get into our band, you know, because four of us have been there from the beginning, you know, 23 years now, and Mona B has been with us 15 years. So anyone who comes into the band will have a problem, you know, getting to know everybody. But with Daniel, we've known him for a long, long time, you know, and he's awesome, you know, and he's a great musician. But I think he increasingly felt like he wants to be a band leader, you know, he wants to take charge and stuff like that, and there's no way you can do that in our band, you know, we're very democratic and everybody has their say and stuff like that, and also I think after a while we figure out that we weren't really, you know, working in the same direction, you know, and so when we talked about it, we realized that perhaps you need to do something else, you know, and this is not exactly what you need to do, you know, and he agreed, and now he's happy because he's forming a new band, and he runs his studio really well, and for us it actually works out too, because now we can really focus the five of us on being the best we can be, you know. So I think it totally worked out, you know. It's always sad, but at the same time it has to happen sometimes, you know.
Okay, so who played bass on the album, and who will be playing bass on the tour?
On the album, it was Martin Hendrickson, who played bass from the beginning in the band and switched to guitarist in '99 before Projector.
Yes.
After Projector, rather. And that was really exciting. You know, we realized, like, we don't need another bass player. We have Martin right here, you know, and you should play. And he started writing bass parts for it, and I think he did a fantastic job, and it sounds so awesome. And but for the tour, we're going to get session bass players to fill in for us. We're not really ready to bring a new kind of full-on member in right now, so we're going to take it slow and see what happens and you know, employ the help of some of our friends in the meantime.
Okay, so you were talking about the Gothenburg sounds, and you're probably the one who created it. And Dark Tranquillity has been around for 23 years, as you said. Back then, did you really think that you still be around in 2013 and still be able to make a living out of this?
No, of course not. I mean, we had no idea, and I think we never really planned too far ahead either, you know. Our plan was always to make music out of the influences and the bands that we love, you know. Like, create something that is different and interesting and that we feel is lacking in the scene or whatever, and just have fun, you know. And then all of a sudden we got a record deal. Wow, you know, awesome, you know, and then we went there, you know, and then we were offered tours and stuff, and all that is a bonus in my book still, you know, because the main thing is to write good songs, you know, and have that creative experience where the five of us can sit around and come up with something that is amazing, that we can be really proud of. And the rest, as far as I'm concerned, is kind of like a bonus thing. And things, I guess the years have just, you know, passed by sometimes. It doesn't feel like 20 years. It feels, I don't know, it feels career to even think like that. But at the same time, of course, we've done a lot of amazing things over the years, like so many fantastic things have happened because of the fact that we were in the band, you know, and because of the music that we've done, you know, and we're incredibly thankful for that, and it's awesome, you know.
Yeah.
But no, of course, now we never thought that we would be doing this for such a long time, but at the same time, I think we're, you know, we feel better and stronger than ever, you know, we're in better shape than ever, and we're just still as excited normally, you know, and I guess the last couple of years we realized that we need to take control over everything as well and make sure that nothing happens out of our control, so we book the shows, we book the tours, we do all that stuff, and that makes it that much more satisfying when everything works out, you know, so that's become a great part of the last couple of years as well, so yeah, this is still fun, and no, who knows, 10 more years, 20 more years, who knows, we'll see.
Yes, hopefully. And who were your influences back then? Like, you created a new sound. Like, it came from where?
For us, it came from the thrash bands that we love, like Creator, Sodom, Destruction, these really, really intense, like, German thrash bands, and American death metal, like Atheist and Death and Morbid Angel, bands like that, and also the melodic nature of speed metal bands, like Halloween, Black Guardian, that kind of thing.
Okay.
But also, we wanted lyrics that were, you know, more than just horror film lyrics and stuff like that. So we were influenced by Sabbath and such bands that, you know, reached out a little bit more and tried a little bit harder to make it philosophical or poetic or different, you know. And so that was our inspiration, to write melodic, intense, aggressive music, you know. And of course, we had a background of like traditional heavy metal and Thin Lizzy and, you know, guitar-driven rock, you know. But I think those were the biggest influences for us, and we didn't really care much for anything else back then, and we were so focused on just being the most original we could ever be, so as soon as we wrote something that had the slightest similarity to anything else we've heard, we just immediately threw it away, you know, and we started from scratch again, and that became like this really important thing for us, you know, with every single song that we made, and I guess we were pretty anal about it, but it worked out, and now it's I don't know, now it's all we can do, I guess.
Yeah, and lyric-wise, what inspires you now?
Oh, I get angry about a lot of things, you know, there's a lot of things that makes me want to scream and write and get things, you know, get it out of my system, so I think my main inspiration, I think, is just the lack of, how do you say it, like this lack of balance that I see, especially like in news and in reports, you know, it's so biased, it's so skewed in a certain way that I just start thinking about what's really, really true when you think about it. What's the reason behind the way that this is written or this is presented, you know, and why are they telling me this, you know, and why should I believe in this, you know, why should I trust this and that, you know, and I try to kind of be skeptical towards everything, you know, so it's this skeptical thinking that I think has kind of been an obsession of mine lately, and that also, it's a source of great frustration because you realize how much bullshit you're being fed, you know, constantly, and how there are so many things that affect everything that we read, you know, and see, and I don't know, I just get tired of being misled and lied to, you know, and I want the world to be more rational, you know, I want like a scientific method to be applied to everything that we do, and so that is always kind of the thing that drives me forward, I think, and forces me pretty much to write, you know.
Okay, and I have a tough question for you. What's your favorite Dark Tranquillity album?
Ooh, apart from the latest one, I guess I always come back to The Gallery because that was the first one that I sang on, the first one where I felt that we had a proper lineup and a proper band and that we were skilled enough as musicians to do anything, you know, to really, really play properly and to really make the music that we wanted to, that we kind of heard in our heads, but we couldn't play with our hands, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think, and that was, of course, a hugely important album for us as well. I mean, that's what started it for us, you know, that's what got us on out on tour, and that's what the first album that was properly distributed, you know, over the world, and it, yeah, I mean, that's the album that started it, and I'm very, very proud of it.
Okay, and probably not everybody knows, but you sang on the first In Flames record called Luna Strain in 1994, and I think you wrote pretty much the record by yourself, or at least you had credits on every song. Were you supposed to be a permanent member back then, or?
No. But I wrote the lyrics, but no, it was when Jesper formed In Flames, we had just released Skydancer, you know, and that just came out, and he was really into it and loved it, you know, and he wanted, and he was in a band called Ceremonial Oath back then.
Okay.
And had like two main songwriters, and Jesper was not one of them, but he had a lot of things to write, and so he was just like, outside of that band, I want to write something myself, you know, and he was, and so he started writing a few songs, and he wanted to kind of record a demo just for the hell of it, you know, and with some of his friends, with Johan Larsson and Jesper, and Glenn Ljungström and Björn Charlotte. And so he did this demo, and he asked me to sing on it just so he could have a vocalist, you know, and I was like, yeah, sure, you know, right? And at that point, we had just fired Anders from the band, and I stopped playing guitar and started singing. So it was, you know, perfect timing for me because I needed all the practice I could get, you know, and I wanted to sing as much as possible. So I was rehearsing and starting writing for the gallery, I think, and at the same time, I was rehearsing with In Flames because, you know, I needed the practice and the experience. So then we did this demo for three songs, and immediately they got a record deal. So then they asked me, it's like, oh, do you want to record do more songs so we can make an album? And it's like, yeah, I don't know, you know, I don't want my first album as a singer to be something else than Dr. Quillity, you know?
Like, yeah.
That would be weird. But at the same time, they said, well, you get a lot of free beer, come on. And I was like, oh, fuck it, let's do it. So I did that album, and it was great experience and a lot of fun, and it turned out really, really well, I think. And that was it. And then we did a couple of shows, you know, not that big, and that was it. And then they moved on to another singer for a while, and then another, I think, and then Anders joined them, which was, you know, kind of like a cool thing. It's like, wow, you know, that makes sense. And that's what happened.
And do you guys still hang around, or?
Yeah, of course, for sure.
Okay, and let's talk about touring. You've played like 200 shows for the Into the Void tour. Do you miss your family sometimes?
All the time, yeah. Definitely all the time, but I think I rationalize it, or I make it, I justify it by knowing that whenever I'm home, I'm really at home. You know, I'm home many months of the year, usually, and this year I've been home a lot, and last year as well, so that's good. And then when I'm touring, we try to work as hard as we possibly can to make sure that we don't have any off days, we don't have any unnecessary time away from our family as in our normal lives at home. So if I'm on tour, I want to be playing every single day.
Okay.
And every extra, you know, off day or travel day is just wasted time, in my opinion, you know. So that's how I try to kind of fill it. And also we don't want to play too long a time, you know, so we do tours that are 6 weeks perhaps, that's kind of the limit, and then we go home for a couple of weeks, and then we do another tour. So it's we don't want to tour for longer than that. That doesn't make any sense. It's,
yeah, that's a good way to keep your sanity.
I think so, you know.
And when can we expect you in Montreal and Quebec?
We are working on a North American tour right now, and I'm pretty sure that Canada will be included in that. I haven't really checked all the dates just yet, but we're going to announce that very, very soon. We start in September, late September. We're going to bring some incredibly cool bands that I cannot wait for us to announce. And, yeah, so late September, and then we definitely, of course, will come to Montreal.
So you don't have any scoop for me for opening bands?
Yeah, we do, but I cannot tell you just yet. We're gonna finalize that in the next couple of days. But if all goes well, it's gonna be incredible.
Wow, I can't wait to see that. And yeah. Do you have any fond memories from playing in Quebec and Montreal?
Yeah, a lot actually. I mean, I think one thing I always come back to whenever I talk about like that part of Canada is like, whenever we do an American tour, as long as cool as North America is, like, but everything looks the same, you know, and you kind of get used to it after a while. And then coming up to Quebec or to Montreal, you feel like home, you know. This is European, you know. This, the atmosphere is totally different, and people are totally different, and it really, really makes us kind of, it relieves the homesickness a little bit, you know, when we get up there. And I have some really, really good friends there who have shown me around a lot in Quebec, and also last time we had some time off in Montreal for a couple of days. That was fantastic. So I really love the atmosphere. I wish we could spend way more time there, actually. And it's a little bit, you know, time away, like home away from home in many ways for us.
Yeah, I remember I saw you a couple of years back with the Haunted in Montreal at Le Medley, and the crowd was just so intense. It was probably one of the best metal shows I've ever seen in my life.
Wow, cool. Yeah, I remember that. I remember being incredibly moved by the reception, and it was really cool.
Yeah, Scar Symmetry was on the bill also. Yeah, that was
a great show.
That's
right. Cool guys, man.
Yes, and my last question today, Michael. Recently, Deftones guitarist Stephen Carpenter, he said in the press that when it comes to fans illegally downloading his band's music, he said that he had no problem with that, and that people that are downloading your music are fans or potential fans. Would you agree with that?
I agree that they are fans and they are potential fans, but I'm not sure if I'm 100% okay with illegal downloading, you know. I know that it's really easy, it's really simple,
yeah.
You know, and it's kind of hard to justify to yourself why you should spend money on an album that you could just, that is just one click away, you know. But I think there are so many great solutions, you know, to that now. You know, if you have Spotify or you use iTunes or whatever, the Google Music Store, whatever, it's so simple to kind of to get music, and it's still not expensive. You know, it's there. You know, and I think for me, like, I love buying digital albums, and I love using Spotify whenever I'm in the car or when I need to look up something new or when I cannot sleep and I'm looking for new albums and new artists and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Awesome, you know? And when I don't feel like going to the record store. But then I also love going out and buying vinyl or CDs, you know? And it's, I think as long as you support music, and you should know that, you know, making music is not free, you know?
No.
An album costs a lot to produce, and I think that's being forgotten, you know. And it's easy if you're younger. Of course, that's kind of hard to get, you know, because you don't really see it that way. But for us, you know, it takes a lot of effort and a lot of work and a lot of money to record and to release an album, and for people just to steal it, yes, I'm not okay with that, you know.
I hear you.
but at the same time, you know, cool, fucking listen to it, fine, but then also buy it, you know?
Exactly.
You know, I can do like that. I sometimes, like, I buy it digitally, but then I only listen to it on Spotify or stuff like that I already pay for. But I still kind of like to own it, you know? And some albums I buy on vinyl, but I only listen to the CD or only listen to the digital version just because I love owning the album, but I don't need to put it on. Yeah.
And there's a solution now. Like, that's personally what I do. Pretty much all the new albums come out on vinyl also. So I purchase them on vinyl, and usually there's a digital code inside to get it on MP3 for free. So I think it could be a solution to resolve that problem, because the vinyls are coming back really strong in the last 2 years.
And we're going to release, I haven't seen it yet because it's in the printing factory right now, but the vinyl version of Construct is really cool, and it's a special cover for that Nicholas made that looks incredible, and it also includes a see it, you know, and it's really cool. And I've been shopping for vinyl all day today here in Dortmund, Germany, and I found some really, really good stuff. I'm very happy today.
So is it going to be on two separate vinyls or just condensed on one?
No, it's on two separate. So it's one 12-inch and one 7-inch.
Awesome. Well, that's one I'm going to purchase.
Yeah, of course.
Well, thanks again for your time, Michael. It was really appreciated. And, well, we hope to see you on tour in Quebec and Montreal pretty soon. And have a great success with Construct. And I can't wait to see you on stage.
I'll be right there eating all your poutine.
And Molson Canadian.
Oh, yes.
All right. Thank you, Michael.
Sweet. Take care. Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.